Improving health literacy, the ability to understand and act on health information, is key to improving health outcomes and lowering costs. Welcome to the Health Literacy 2.0 podcast, the podcast series from EdLogix, where we talk with business, HR, health, and community leaders and explore unique, data-driven, and effective behavior-changing solutions that can help improve people's health literacy and increase their engagement with health and wellness programs. For show notes and bonus resources, visit www.edlogix.com/podcast. Okay, let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast on health literacy and workforce well-being. I'm Seth Sirksner, Chief Health Officer at EdLogix. Thanks again for taking the time. I'm so happy today to be talking with Kristen Parker, a former colleague of mine at Mercer, continues to be a leader there. Kristen, you and I go back, I think it's almost 20 years, something like that. I know a lot about your background, but I would really appreciate it if you could give everyone a little bit of your background and how you've kind of ended up at your current role and what that is.
Great. Thank you for having me, Seth. Excited to be here and happy to talk a little bit about my background to start us off. I currently lead Mercer Well, which is Mercer's specialty practice focusing on well-being, specifically as we implement programs for employers, primarily to help them address the population health of their employee population, as well as associated dependents. I've spent the vast majority of my career in this space, and in fact, within Mercer. I've been with the firm for about 16 years now. And as you know, you and I worked closely together when I first started at the firm. And then as a result of a lot of the work that you and I did together, helped me identify exactly what I wanted to go back to graduate school for. So I went back to graduate school and got my master's in public health and my PhD in health promotion and health behavior, with a real keen focus on program evaluation of employer health promotion programs. So that was a lot of fun. When I got back to Mercer, did a lot of work in the advocacy space, program evaluation space, and then started to get the opportunity to take on leadership roles. So I started leading our Northeast market for our what's now Mercer Well team, and then eventually had some additional leadership opportunities that led me to lead. 3 to 4 years ago, I had the opportunity to take on the role of building out our first specialty practices on a global basis. So we had some real capabilities in certain geographies and not in others, and certainly no coordination across them. So that's really been my goal internationally, is to build out that community and that consistency and to scale our capabilities into new geographies.
Amazing. So I have so many questions. I'll go backwards from the last thing you just said, which is you talked a little bit about global. I haven't talked a lot about global on this podcast lately. I'm sure this will be obvious to some, but what are the big differences between kind of a global view of population health and well-being versus maybe a US-centric view?
Sure. So I would say the first and foremost that struck me, frankly, when I stepped into this role was just how complex the management of global programs looks like, especially for a multinational employer, given the vast difference of health issues, health systems, and just broader governance components of running a global program. So certainly a lot to navigate there, and thinking about a global type of an approach where we've got kind of global minimum standards for a large organization multinationally, but really allowing that local execution, since there is going to be so much variability. But then how do you have a certain level of governance over that? It's something that employers are always trying to solve for. We help them to solve for it, but it's got to be a living and breathing process with constant improvements. And then another interesting aspect is, of course, that I mentioned the healthcare systems are so different, including the role of social medicine versus employer medicine. And so the value proposition of how we position well-being programs in different markets is very different. Whether we're focused on more of a occupational health and safety perspective, a productivity perspective, a healthcare cost perspective, needs to really get unique to what the needs and demands are in that market.
So, you know, some people would say that US is starting to learn a bit from the kind of global version, a little less focus on healthcare costs, a little bit more focus on general employee well-being that improves all those other non-cost related. Would you agree with that? Is it similar, different? Are we learning anything from each other?
So I sure hope we're learning something from each other.
We try
to be not quite so self-centered. I would say we definitely are. When I think about different client segments, whether it's US or international or multinational, I think about those clients that I would call kind of minimalists. They're trying to check the box. They need to have a certain offering in order to be competitive. Then we have more of the pragmatists, and those pragmatists actually really, they want to do more than check the box, but they're under a lot of financial pressures. And so there needs to be a clear return on that investment. And for some of them, a broader definition of a value on investment versus a pure return on investment will work, but they really have to be able to build that business case. And then we have kind of a third category of folks that are going to be more kind of, you know, global citizens in nature, where they're really looking to rise all tides. They look at this from a community building aspect, more of an ESG aspect in terms of how they approach their population health and well-being offerings. And so when I think about those three different segments, they're going to be driven by different factors, and therefore global lessons may apply more to certain of them than others. But certainly, you know, when you look at the more of the kind of global citizen approach, we're certainly seeing a lot of learnings there outside of just the direct return on investment. But one specific example that's become really top of mind for me lately, given some of the projects that I've been working on, is around psychological and psychosocial safety in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And especially in the Canadian and Australian markets, we're seeing that from really a compliance perspective come top of mind. And I've seen that concept penetrate into other markets as well, somewhat as a result of that. But here in the US, for example, we're seeing more demand from our clients, and we're trying to talk more to other clients to raise the demand around this topic. So manager trainings, for example, around psychosocial risk and safety, and even starting not just at the frontline managers, which are critically important, but also all the way up in the C-suite to have C-suite trainings around this topic. And it's a particular interest in that it's so multifaceted and requires not just the work that we do within the Mercer Well practice with our psychologists, psychiatrists, et cetera, but also in collaboration with our colleagues in our careers business and change management, organizational design, et cetera, to holistically address it.
Psychological safety. I know we, you know, in the US, people talk about bringing your authentic self, being able to express your ideas without being, you know, any retribution or anything like that. But give me a little bit more specifics on what this psychosocial safety is all about.
Yeah, so definitely includes what you just articulated. I would expand it a bit more to also think about, maybe you took a little bit of kind of a positive psychology approach to it. If we take kind of the counter of that and the risks associated with a toxic work environment, including leading to, you know, mental disability leave, workers' comp claims, et cetera. And in some geographies, even holding officers of the business personally liable for that kind of fostering that type of a work environment. So how do we make sure that we are addressing any toxicity in the workplace proactively through a number of different interventions? I mentioned manager trainings, but you know, it can go much deeper than that.
So interesting. In the thick of COVID, I had a healthcare client, an executive who came to me and said, I have to talk to you. I have an issue going on that I had never faced before. And he explained that he had a lot of political unrest in the environment where, for example, someone might have been wearing a Trump-oriented MAGA hat, somebody else is wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. They're both just trying to get a cup of coffee and they're exhausted healthcare workers, but there's a lot of political tension. And that led to kind of not a good psychosocial environment, I guess. So dealing with that. And the only advice that I could give, but I'm curious to get your take on this, was I said, let's use your diversity and inclusion philosophy that everyone is welcome, all the ideas are welcome, et cetera, as a way to diffuse some of that tension. But does that fit into it partially, or is that?
Yeah, I think for certain that fits into it, both in terms of what could create a challenging environment and ways to address it. Another approach that I've seen a group take recently is something as kind of straightforward as training around feedback. So sometimes feedback and direct conversations, especially if they're constructive in nature, can be really difficult, and not done properly can create what is could feel like a toxic work environment. So even giving people training and not just people managers, you should be giving, you know, feedback up, down, sideways, et cetera, on how to properly give feedback, set the right context, ask permission first before you give feedback, share your motivation for giving feedback. And it should be a, you know, a positive one. Make sure you pause and give people an opportunity to provide a response to your feedback. There are a number of different ways to structure a conversation that can diffuse what could potentially escalate into a perception of an unsafe work environment.
That's a great example. I could go on that, but I will just say that in my little team, when I was leading a team, we fostered a little theme, feedback is a gift. And I can remember when I explained this to a group of actually consultants I was presenting to, I said, look, and feedback is a gift. And when I finished my thing, they go, Seth, we have a lot of gifts to give you right now.
So, no good deed goes unpunished there. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. So super interesting. What else? What are a couple of the other big things that your clients are raising for you that you guys are trying to address?
Yeah. So there are four main topics I would say that we're seeing really popping up from our clients right now. Mental health is a huge one. Obviously, psychosocial safety falls under that umbrella. So we talked about that a bit. A second is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that also dovetails into psychological safety in many ways, but is, you know, beyond that. Also, a third area is women's health. And I'm actually preparing to do a webinar on that topic tomorrow. And then cancer is kind of a fourth area that we're seeing a lot of focus on. And in fact, we've seen with the kind of moonshot project Cancer X coming out of the White House earlier this year, that that's also just a much broader public health concern at the moment.
Yeah. So it's interesting though, out of those four things, the classic like wellness, well-being, incentives, biometrics, all that old school stuff, a little bit not so much anymore? Or is that just like taken for granted? Everybody's doing that. Let's move to this other stuff. Or is that kind of like, maybe I'm not going to put my money there anymore?
It's a couple things. One, I would say it's table stakes. And people expect that you have that. So we can't forget about it. It needs to be done. It needs to be done right. So that's one thing. I think a second thing is that people are drawn to the shinier topics, the new topics. And so that's part of it. I think then kind of a third piece, though, is that they shouldn't be mutually exclusive in that if we're talking about women's health, we should make sure women are getting the right biometric screenings. We should make sure that they have the right incentive program in place to drive the right health behaviors, et cetera. So I think, you know, if you consider cancer, mental health, women's health in particular, different vertical areas, I would take DEI and actually make that more of a horizontal area because it should cut across all of those. And then I would take kind of the broader concepts of biometrics and incentive design and broader well-being and also make that a horizontal that cuts across each of these more specific topic areas.
Yeah. So speaking of shiny objects, you know, we've talked a little bit about this. I got really worked up, especially during COVID, over health equity, social determinants of health. And I've always been a big advocate of health literacy and part of this EdLogix bringing this, what I call a health literacy 2.0 point of view to this, which is to use behavioral science, data, and multimedia to really elevate this idea that, frankly, CDC has redefined health literacy to not only be organizational literacy, but personal health literacy. The Healthy People 2030 goals have health literacy goals in them. So I'm curious where you're seeing that fit. Is it a horizontal? Because I know it could be, yes, there's a lot of content around, say, women's health or cancer or any given kind of condition or, you know, health state. But I'm finding that it's a little challenging for clients. They all kind of say, yeah, this makes sense. I get it. Great outcomes. But where do I fit it in my already crowded ecosystem? So first question is, do you think it's relevant or is it just a shiny object? And two, if so, where would it fit in this ecosystem?
Yeah. So I think for sure that it's relevant. No question about that. If we think about all the different areas that I just mentioned, there are, to your point, health literacy components, health education content that's necessary for all of those and being delivered in a way that meets everybody's level of health literacy. I think also when we consider DEI, there's a potential extremely interesting angle on health literacy associated with that. In particular, when we consider how people like to consume information, especially if that's kind of storytelling, verbal information being relayed from somebody of a similar background. And so how do we think about health literacy in that way when we're considering provider choice, for example, as opposed to more traditional kind of written materials?
Yeah. And I've always thought, you know, there's a lot of advocacy products and services. And I've kind of always felt like it's a give a person a fish, not teach a person a fish approach. And it would, for me, seem so complimentary to embed, you know, streaming videos, a little YouTube. Everybody likes an infographic, but we seem to kind of want to problem solve, which makes sense. But I've always thought that it would fit especially well in kind of this advocacy opportunity as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's what is that Mark Twain quote? You know, I would have written you a shorter letter if I had more time. Sometimes it's way easier to just give somebody the fish than to teach them how to fish. And so to take the time to be thoughtful about what does that process look like from a health literacy perspective, to do so, I think is a challenge and a missing component to a lot of the work that we are doing. And frankly, then goes back to the behavior change that I studied in graduate school of how are you actually going to change behavior? It's not by giving the fish, it's by teaching how to.
Yeah. Well, look, Kristen, you know, it would be so fun to keep talking about all these different topics. I really appreciate the time. We've covered a fair amount of ground here. I'm wondering if there's any couple things that you feel like, oh, shoot, I forgot to talk about this, or that you'd really like to just kind of emphasize for clients and other folks out that they're trying to improve the health and well-being and, frankly, the psychosocial safety of their environments.
I think the biggest piece that we're all trying to solve for here, and health literacy is a great example of a component of it, is the broader member experience and member journey. And so just, I guess, a challenge for us all as consultants, as consumers, as problem solvers, vendors, et cetera, to make sure that we're always kind of flipping this story around and looking at it from the consumer's lens. And not only what do they want, but then what does that journey and process look like to get from where they are to the end stage of an end goal of what they want? Whether we're thinking about what's the digital experience, what's the literal healthcare journey look like, what have you. I think it's really easy for us to get siloed in the specific problems that we're trying to solve for in this very large health ecosystem and not take a minute to step back and look at that member journey.
It's a great reminder. I think one of the things that I enjoyed most of all when I was working with a lot of corporate clients, as challenging as it was they were always bringing back their people's position. What's this going to be like for my people? You know, being a little paternalistic about it, but what's that experience going to be? Hey, this seems really great, but that's super hard. Nobody's going to remember that, or why would they bother doing that, or all those things. So I think it's a really good reminder that at the end of the day, we have all these solutions and all these challenges, but it's got to work for people. Well, thank you again for taking the time, Kristen. I really appreciate it. I wish you the best of luck in your leadership role and your global role and all the work you're doing with your clients. Thank you again so much.
Thank you again for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us today on the Health Literacy 2.0 podcast, the podcast series from EdLogix, where we talk with business, HR, health, and community leaders and explore unique, data-driven, and effective behavior-changing solutions that can help improve people's health literacy and increase their engagement with health and wellness programs. Remember, for show notes and bonus resources, visit www.edlogix.com/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe and share the show with your colleagues. Thanks, and see you soon.